What up? How you living?
Lord.
Well, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick my baby up and take her to the picture show. Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but this is Dr. Robin, the producer. I'm Blaine's ex-wife, and if you enjoy listening to him, wait till you hear my new husband, Chris. These two have teamed up to talk new and classic films that they both share a love for. Each week, they will cover a film as well as a related top five list. They will babble, argue, and bond as I try my best to keep them on topic. The show is Misspent Matinee with Blaine and Chris. Tune in here on the Farsighted Network.
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
When you're hugging with your baby in the last row of the balcony.
Opportunity this year. They were incredibly kind to let us, you know, check out, you know, a lot of the movies. Got a chance to also see a few others that debuted and came out, you know, directly after in cinemas. I mean, that's been the main thing, man, just watching movies like usual.
Yeah, man, I've been watching movies. I was on vacation. I got to hang out in the Outer Banks, which is about half the distance from my house to yours. So,
yeah.
So I was halfway there, and I was there waiting for you, and you never showed up. But, you know, so it's fine. I'll let it go this time. But, you know, that's only a 9-hour drive. Man. I mean,
yeah,
you could have done it.
I could have done it, man. You gotta give some degree of heads up.
Not like when I'm already down there. Like, where are you?
Oh, no, absolutely.
That didn't quite work, I guess. But, oh, well. So, But yeah, so I was on vacation, came back with a bit of a cold, but I'm I'm getting over that now. So that's part of why we weren't able to talk to Stephen Bureau this week, because I had to postpone a couple of nights, and we've been having a little bit of phone tag since. So we'll definitely get him on. But in the meantime, Fantasia's been a lot of what I've been watching, too. I've had a chance to watch a few other things as well. We watched Two Evil Eyes to commemorate Romero over on the site. A group of us did. You did not, so, shame, shame.
Well, in all fairness, I didn't want to tarnish that legend with such an awful movie.
you're not a fan, huh?
No, it's one of my least favorite movies by both George Romero and Dario Argento. Not my jam.
That's fair. I think Argento's script is shit. On his half of the movie, I think it's a horrible, horrible script. However, I like Harvey Keitel because he's fucking Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
And he just plays Harvey Keitel. Like, he's an asshole, one of those great asshole characters that Keitel can play better than anyone else. So,
yeah, I always felt like I would like it more if they cut those parts down a little bit and had a few other little shorts as part of the anthology. Neither of those two stand up.
They're both far too long. You could do you could have done a 3 or 4 short film instead of 2 hour long short film.
Right.
They really just play like short features. I mean, we've probably covered features that are as long as those as features. So, they definitely are not really short films in any true sense of the word. But I like Romero's. It's cheesy as hell, but I like it a lot. And so if anyone is interested in hearing our thoughts on that, that's up on the website. And then over on the Far Sighted. And I also got a chance, haven't had a chance to write about any of these yet, but a few films that I'm going to be writing about for Synapse. Phoenix Forgotten, it just came out on Blu-ray. It wasn't as bad as people acted like it was.
Right.
It's a lot of people said, it's just aping, Blair Witch so bad. Not any more than any other found footage film, really. it's in that style of found footage film that became popular with Blair Witch. But it's a alien flick, and it's got me really interested in the actual Phoenix Lights phenomenon. So I'm gonna be, watching some documentaries on that sure soon. While I was on vacation, I had a chance to watch Endless Poetry.
What'd you think of that?
Did you get to see Dance of Reality, Jodorowsky's last one before this?
Yes, I was I am a huge fan of Jodorowsky's Santa Sangre. Is one of my favorite films of all time. Dance of Reality, it did not do it for me, but, I mean, I watch anything.
Don't bother with Endless Poetry, then.
Well, I can't not see it. I still want to see more from him.
Part 2 of Dance of Reality. That's what
I've heard people say that it kind of contextualizes that first one a little bit more, since the first one's about his father, and this one's about him. I want to see, because there's no way that I'm not going to watch a Jodorowsky movie. That dude is old. We've got a limited amount of time. I'm going
to
see.
It could very well be his last one, although there's supposed to be a third part to it, apparently. But
I want that dude. Even if he dies, I hope his kids keep everything going and keep that legacy alive.
Since they're pretty much the only people in his movies,
absolutely
are related to him. If your last name's not Jodorowsky, or you're not married into his family, you're probably not going to get a part.
So. Oh my God, yeah. And to me, I will watch those movies and buy those DVDs just for the special features with Jodorowsky. He is infinitely watchable, and maybe one of my favorite personalities in cinema in general.
I'm assuming you've probably seen Jodorowsky's Dune?
Oh,
the documentary?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's probably one of the more pleasurable films of just like, I'll just turn it on and just like do dishes and stuff, because it just makes me happy.
if it weren't for the fact that we've discussed this before, I like dubs over subtitles. I just do. I don't like to read while watching movies.
Yeah.
But if it were if it was in English, it would probably be something I'd play over and over and over. But I am still a really big fan of Jodorowsky Dune. I wrote about Jodorowsky for Synapse a few years ago, and did kind of like a, I, did like six films, like five of his films and then that. And it was that and Dance of Reality kind of together really contextualized him for me. And then now I definitely think Endless Poetry kind of just piggybacks right. It picks up literally right where the last one ended and keeps going with its life. So it was interesting. I only gave it 3 stars on my Letterbox, which that means jack shit. But I'll probably watch it again before I write about it, just because I feel like I need to rewatch parts of it. But overall, wasn't bad. It's not, you know, don't go in expecting Holy Mountain.
Right.
To be fair, you can't expect Holy Mountain out of anything. I wouldn't even. My favorite of his films is Del Topo, but don't expect that either. So yeah. I also got a chance to watch for a long time been on my Netflix queue, Harbinger Down, Lance Hendrickson.
Such a rad movie.
So the effects were really cool, but the interesting thing to me was that for the effects team that they had, I feel like they might have not had the budget they needed for that film, because they had this crazy great effects team that did Alien and this and that, and then the movie is so darkly lit, you can tell they're trying to cover up some stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, we got to turn the lights down because you can see some shit.
Well, they got backed into a corner. They were making a straight to video movie, which I like it as a straight to video kind of Alien thing ripoff. I mean, I think it's awesome for that. I didn't know any of the hype behind it when I saw it. I just saw a movie with Lance Hendrickson pop up called Harbinger Down, and I watched it. And I was like, that's cool. You know, moving on. And then I heard the whole debacle behind the Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah,
or Kickstarter. I'm not sure what.
I think it was Kickstarter, but yeah. Whatever.
So I mean, I'm not one of those people. Like, I got way too much going on in my life to care about if things are 100% practical or anything like that. I mean, I'm just
I agree.
To me, like, it was a cool straight to video kind of like. To me, it's like a really good sci-fi movie that I dug.
It was funny, and I love. Lance Henderson's amazing in it. He's just this grumpy old man. I love him. He just is a great grumpy old man. He really is.
He's always better than his material.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He never has a script nearly as good as he makes it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just who he is. But I also, just last night, got to watch Colossal. I thought that was pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, I have had that movie for a while to watch, and I just have not gone around to it. So
it is not what I expected. So it is and isn't what I expected. So it is in the sense that the basic idea of what's happening, you know, just because you see that in the previews and stuff, but the actual storyline, and that won't ruin it for you or anybody here, goes in a different direction completely than I was expecting.
So
and that's in a good way. I mean, there are some questions I might have about the way they took some of the directions they took in some regards, but you know, I think that they came out with a really interesting, if nothing else, extremely interesting product. You know what I mean?
And it's got Miss Prince's Diaries, Anne Hathaway. I see.
Damn right, man. I'm a big fan of Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, me too.
And I could go on. I watched a lot of movies actually on vacation because I watch stuff before bed every night. You know, that's just kind of how I fall asleep. But most of them, a lot of them, were Fantasia. So let's talk about Fantasia. For anyone who doesn't know, Wayne, what is Fantasia Festival?
I mean, it's a huge, annual film festival that covers pretty much like the best of new genre film. You know, everything from like sci-fi, horror, thriller, experimental, and usually kind of runs the gambit of all the stuff that you're going to want to see over the next, you know, six to nine months. And I mean, every year, it's one of those that you just have to check. And for being someone who works on a film festival. Shout out to Buried Alive Film Festival. It really is a huge tastemaker in the entire industry, and where most of the movies that you care about, where they go to market. So I think that's a pretty good rundown.
Yeah, I definitely think Fantasia, as far as the genre film and stuff of maybe like lower middle level budget, especially. I think Fantasia also plays huge big budget stuff, but
Which we'll get to one of those.
Yeah, but Fantasia and Fantastic are probably two of the biggest ones.
Yeah, and also the TIFF
TIFF.
Midnight Madness at TIFF. Yeah, that's the other one.
Definitely. So Texas and Canada are apparently where you go to find good movies.
Hell yeah, we all know that.
So what were the movies you got a chance to check out?
The ones that I ended up checking out is the one that I liked the most and enjoyed and everything was Super Dark Times, which was in my
opinion, I got to watch too, so we'll get a chance to talk a little bit about that. It's really good.
No, absolutely, which is a fantastic debut. Also saw Kodoku, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, Kodoku Meatball Machine, which is a sequel to the movie that came out probably about 8 or 9 years ago, Japanese gore flick. As well as checking out Tragedy Girls, which is a surprisingly funny film. Another thing we'll talk about, Assholes, which it's interesting to say the least.
A movie about our podcast.
No, I wish it was. It would be more interesting. We are not interesting. Valerian and the Planet of a Thousand, or City of a Planet.
And you right. Got a chance to see that, right?
Yeah, I saw it, man. It is. I'm gonna blow my load early on this one and say, it is the biggest waste of money I've ever seen on screen.
I heard it's gorgeous, like gorgeous. Is that true?
It looks fantastic. For the first 20 minutes, it is like mind blowing. I was totally
like Avatar level mind blowing.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's even more the mind blowing than when I first saw Avatar. It is wow. What they're doing as far as CG. It's the best you'll ever see. The problem is after 20 minutes, you don't give a shit anymore. It's a fucking terrible movie. It's the ultimate crime for me. It is boring.
That's so disappointing.
Boring and long.
Like, when I first saw a preview, like, 2 years ago for Valerian, I was like, oh my god, this looks so cool. But it also, from the beginning, I thought it might be the kind of film that looks cool. And that's really the best part about it.
Which, that's Luc Besson over the past probably 10 or 15 years. Makes a lot of really cool-looking stuff.
I liked Lucy, dude.
Lucy looked cool once again. I mean, for me, like, Lucy wasn't terrible, but it was... You gotta admit, it got
problem,
dumb.
Part of the problem with Lucy is that Scarlett Johansson is a horrible actress.
I mean, she's not half as bad as she is in that movie.
I think one of the reasons I think she works in that movie is because that character is supposed to have no personality. So I'm like, hey, it kind of works because she has no personality. But I like Lucy. I wouldn't say I love Lucy, but. I liked Lucy. That was bad. I know, man. That was like Doug Tilly level pun right there.
Ooh, it's something. It's Valerian. The best review that I could walk away with was after about 45 minutes in the movie, my 7-year-old son turned to me and said, "Daddy, is it cool if I take a nap?"
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that is like we might need to like cover Valerian sometime when it comes out on like Netflix just so you can type that in your Friday Fight. Oh my god. That's great.
And of course, like a good parent, I said, "No, you're staying awake. I spent $25 on this piece of shit." So
I love it. Oh man. So,
what about you, man? What'd you see?
A little with the big one. I also saw Super Dark Times. I also saw Tragedy Girls. And actually, those are probably the only two I've watched so far. I was supposed to check out Savage Dog, but I haven't because I got busy. And I was supposed to check out Boyka, but then they ended up not being able to get a screener link for that one. So two movies I did see, you also saw. So I definitely want to spend a little bit of extra time on those two. But before we get to those, hit me up with a little bit about Meatball Machine, a little bit about Low Life, and I guess then we'll talk about the ones we both saw.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Kodoku Meatball Machine, like I said, it's a follow-up to the original Meatball Machine, which surprisingly had a decent little run on Netflix for a while, but it was strange, incredibly surreal, kind of exploiting all the kind of grossest stuff kind of about Japanese culture, and at least like from a pop sociological side, you know, kind of Japanese culture, a lot of like
right.
kind of farting girls, you know, Japanese fetishistic stuff. And I mean, it's an interesting story of a man who finds out he's going to die and kind of his journey and kind of get wrapped up into that world. But overall, it's way too long. It clocks in at over 2 hours.
Ooh, that sounds brutal for something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's
2 hours is one thing when you're talking about, you know, some epic sprawling whatever, but when you're talking about,
it's so. I mean, that's one of those movies. I hope that when it goes to U.S. markets, it does get edited, which I could really see it happening. That's not out of the ordinary with films that play. At Fantasia, a lot of times these international movies, they'll get a U.S. cut, and it definitely needs tightening. Low Life, which is I want everybody to go and just Google images and see the picture of the luchador. It's something that I think is like one of the most iconic images. Yeah, but Low Life, it was really great, super low budget crime movie. Really, really way sleazier and more exploitation than I was anticipating. A really fun kind of setup. Reminds me a lot of kind of like the late era blaxploitation where you just kind of had like, you know, it's like you have a really like larger than life bad guy who's, you know, he's not only a pimp, he's also, you know, an organ harvester. He's also doing and it kind of follows like three different groups of characters who are all kind of intersecting because of this big baddie. And it's got fantastic writing. There's a interaction between a friend who's a white dude from Compton and his friend who's African American, and the two are, and the white guy's getting out of jail, and when it reveals that the white guy, who definitely has a, I guess, a cadence to his voice, you can tell that he grew up, you know, in inner city areas. When he turns and you notice the giant swastika tattooed on his face, it is one of the best jokes I've seen for a while, and they play it so well. It's fantastic. I'm hoping that gets distribution, and I think will be one of those movies that will eventually find its audience, and I think it'll end up blowing up pretty big.
One of the really cool things about that movie is that the director is going to be coming on the podcast at the end of the month.
Yeah, what's up, Ryan Prowse?
Yeah, man, hopefully he's listening now. Ryan was kind enough to jump aboard when we said we'd love to have him on, and he, you know, as a little preview to that show, we're going to actually be watching two other crime exploitation kind of films that are pretty classic ones. We're going to be checking out Wild at Heart, which is one of the few David Lynch films I have not seen, and I'm going blank. What's the other film?
Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. Yeah. One of my favorite Sam Peckinpah movies, because every Sam Peckinpah movie is my favorite.
I have a copy sitting here, and I have yet to watch it. So,
oh my gosh, get
so
on
I'm
that shit.
So I have two new movies to watch for that episode I'm really stoked on. So that's going to be a blast, and we're going to actually have two guests on that episode with our friend and writer for the website and podcast host extraordinaire, who hosts like 300 podcasts, Doug Tilley, who also did a lot of Fantasia coverage for us on The Farsighted this year, so that was pretty cool.
No, absolutely, and the last movie I saw out of that bunch that you didn't see is unfortunately Assholes, which
let's get that out of the way then.
Let's get out of the way. Let's get all the negativity out of the way. Assholes on Paper should have been my kind of movie. It's experimental. It's disgusting. It's
full. Hey, I'll better read the first sentence of your review. Ready?
Okay.
On paper, this should be my favorite movie of the year. A gross out comedy that's full of shit, demons, and a strong cast of young actors. What could go wrong, right? Wrong.
and that's it. I mean, like, it's an interesting premise about a couple who's kind of going through a destructive codependent relationship with drug abuse and end up summoning an ass demon. And it unloads. The truth is, it just spirals. It starts out with an idea and has no clue what it wants to do with it. It for a while, it turns into a performance art piece where you see the cast interacting with real people in town in Times Square.
That's weird.
Yeah, and then at the very end, I don't want to ruin the movie because it's not out yet, but the very end of the movie, if you have a brain in your head, you will despise it. It gets awful. It turns into the shittiest improv YouTube video.
You think like they just ran out of ideas?
At the end of the movie, I think they were afraid that they weren't going to crack over an hour, and they created this piece at the end that was so unnecessary. Because originally, I just didn't like it. After that final 10 minutes or so, I hated it. Yeah, that was the problem. And you and I were speaking, away from the podcast. I checked out that director's his first short film, and it's really interesting. He seems to be a guy who's got fresh ideas and a lot of talent with the camera. It just Assholes is not the film he wanted it to be. There's no way it is. So yeah. Like I said before, I hope this guy keeps cracking at it and works on his craft and bounces back, because the guy's got cool ideas,
right?
But Assholes is not the movie. So
well, the other website I write for that I actually did my Fantasia coverage on over Cinef, one of their writers covered Assholes, and he called it mumblecore on acid. And said it was like a John Waters-esque surreal. And then he said there were a lot of assholes in this movie. It was aptly named. So, I don't think he loved it either.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to trash John Waters or mumblecore directors with that.
Which, man, all these perfect segues in this brief, touch base episode. We're going to be having a John Waters episode in September.
Oh, hell yeah. I almost forgot about that. Yes, I cannot wait.
We have a lady that I write with on a website called Cinepunks that we've mentioned their podcast before. When I say I write for them, I write for them like once every 3 months, maybe. and so to be fair, their founder, Liam O'Donnell, he was supposed to write for my website, and 3 years later has written me zero pieces. So I feel better that I've given him like 4 in like 2 years. So
that's as many articles as he's written for Cinepunks though as well, right?
Yeah, that's like, no, he's written like 3 or 4 during the entire time they've had that site now. But he has a lot of really good writers over there. One of them's name is Adriana Gover. I don't want to mispronounce the name, but she's going to be on our podcast, and she decided she wanted to cover some Waters, and we were like, oh, that's perfect. And so I think we're going to probably look at, we haven't officially set up the lineup for that, but we're going to probably look at some early Waters exploitation stuff I wrote about, what's that damn movie that came before Pink Flamingos? Multiple Maniacs.
Multiple Maniacs, yeah.
And then probably Pink Flamingos, probably those two, but maybe we'll choose others, who knows. My favorite film of his may not really fit our motif as much, but I love Pecker.
Pecker gets slept on. Because my
I think
favorite
that's Ed Furlong's best movie. Oh, that might not be saying much. Yeah. I mean, obviously T2 is his best movie, but he's not really spectacular in it.
To me, you run the gambit on his films, and they all kind of fall in. It's hard for me not to say that it's not my favorite, because I love them all. But Desperate Living and Female Trouble are absolute classics. I probably
so we'll figure out which ones we're doing, because it seems like we're going to have a lot to pick from.
No, absolutely. And I think in the midst of all the like debauchery and everything like that, there is like a certain aesthetic that I think ties into a lot of our motifs, especially with kind of this weird nostalgia for an era that doesn't exist.
Sure.
So I think that will be a lot of fun, and I can't wait to talk about that.
Awesome. And so let's dive into the two films we both saw.
Let's do it.
Fantasia. Since you kind of already touched a little bit on how much you like Super Dark Times, we'll come to that at the end. Tell me what you thought of Tragedy Girls.
Yeah, I mean, Tragedy Girls, I did not have very high hopes for. It was something I saw Craig Robinson's in it, who's a guy that I always love seeing pop up, yep. especially in features, because he's incredibly likable, and usually I can get through a movie knowing he's there. And also, a friend of mine, the actor William Tokarski, who's known as the killer in Too Many Cooks, I remember he was telling me that he did this film, so I was like, I'll check it out.
Who does he play?
He plays the janitor.
Oh, got it, cool.
Yeah, he's a Atlanta native, does a lot of stuff for, you know, Adult Swim, and I remember he told me that he had a real great experience and thought that the director was really talented, and I started watching it, and at first, I have to admit, it was starting to kind of grate on me, kind of reminded me a little too much of Detention from a few years back, which I do enjoy. It just felt like it was kind of taking that teenage cadence, and after the first about 15 or 20 minutes, like, the two leads really grew on me. And I ended up really enjoying it. Like, it's not going to be a movie that you're going to see on my top 10 or even maybe my top 20 this year.
Sure.
But to me, it was a fun time spent, just, you know, kind of turning off your brain and watching something that's,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of cotton candy version of horror. But what stood out to me was when it went dark, it went ultra fucking dark, like,
yeah, it did.
And the gore gags were kind of, they felt like they were from a different movie, and I liked how they used that and kind of dragged in this really like kind of nasty and very like realistic effects, similar to something, you know, you would see in a much lower budget film. But
sure,
yeah, I mean, overall I thought it was a little too teenage for me, but I still really enjoyed it.
That's fair. So it's definitely teenage. I definitely, and I'm not comparing it plot-wise necessarily, but in my review I talked about it picking up the mantle of something like The Heathers or A Jawbreaker.
Oh, I can see that.
And neither of them, I don't think, like, plot's completely different, don't get me wrong, and that's a good thing. So you're not copying, but, you know, and plot between Heathers and Jawbreaker is very different too, but I feel like, you know, kind of like what Heathers was in the 80s and then Jawbreaker in the 90s, Tragedy Girls is kind of, it's the social media era version of those kind of movies, you know?
Right.
So it's definitely very, very rooted in social media, and like the whole way social media is these days, which I think is really important when you're doing a teen movie, because it is very much the age we're living in. So go for it, you know. I thought that the plot was interesting. I thought that the acting was really fun. I felt like they all did a great job. I like that the two leads were both X-Men.
Right.
You know? So you had Alexandra Shipp, who is the new Storm from Apocalypse. And you have Brianna Hildebrand, who's a Negasonic Teenage Warhead from Deadpool. So, you know, that was cool. I love Craig Robinson, always. Hashtag remember Big Al.
Yes.
And actually, you know who I really liked was his trainer.
He was great. Yeah.
So do you know who he is?
No, he didn't really stand out to me. I mean, his face.
He's Terry Rhodes, former NFL safety.
For real? Oh, wow. All
right. So a couple years ago, when the Cardinals decided not to re-sign him, he didn't look for. I just read about this. You know, people assumed, oh, no one offered him a job, and he's like, no, I just decided I didn't want to play anymore and decided to focus on acting, and so. You know, a couple of years now, he's been focusing on some smaller acting roles and stuff, and he's got some interesting little roles already. And I thought he was a blast, man. I thought he was, like, a really good comic character, like, you know, and kind of a nice little sidekick for Craig Robinson's character. And
yeah.
And I really enjoyed him. And actually, he went out of his way to not only retweet what I posted the thing, and I didn't even tag him in it. I tagged, you know, Craig Robinson in my review, and Josh Hutcherson, who also was pretty hilarious in his role, by the way.
Right.
Has a weird, aloof, like, Brando-esque biker guy. Like, you know, I thought he was pretty great.
Oh, man, yes.
And talking about how he couldn't just put, you know, I can't just write about, you know, you guys on my blog because I got to write what's really in my heart. You know, like, I was just like, oh, my God, dude. But he was great. And but then, you know, I tagged, you know, the bigger names in it, and then he retweeted it and sent me a really nice, like, tweet back, thank you, and for you know, whatever. And, you know, because I did mention him in my review, so I guess I thought it was really cool that, you know, he's going out of his way to, like, try to make friends with the fans and stuff. And it's a smart move as a as an up-and-coming actor to do, but, it, you know, not everybody goes out of the way to do that. So I thought that was pretty cool. And but overall, the movie as a whole, I think the acting was what I liked the most. I thought that everybody played their role well. It was a good black comedy. And I definitely think you're right. It's not going to make my top 10 or my top 20 or whatever. It's not. I can already tell you that. But I liked it. And I do think, like, when it gets released for home video, will I pick up a copy? Probably. You know?
Right.
And I will rewatch it. And, you know, I'll definitely have it at least on my digital collection and rewatch it that way. And it should be getting a theatrical release around the end of the year, I think. I think that's what I heard, like November, December. So we'll just stay tuned with that. And I'm actually going to try to get their director to pop over with us towards that time. So we'll definitely we'll see how that goes, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I don't know about you, but I think that movie's going to kill at Redbox. Like, that is...
Yeah, it's a Redbox. I can see that. It'll do real well on like iTunes rentals and stuff. You know, the kids are gonna eat it up.
Oh yeah, and the one thing that because I mentioned it before, the only thing that kind of bummed me out was Craig Robinson didn't have much to do in that movie.
Like, he needed a little more screen time. I'll give you that.
Yeah, he needed to. I mean, like it was the one scene where he. It's not going to ruin anything. He ends up cutting off our main two actresses during a speech, but it he just I don't know. I wanted more.
That scene was pretty great,
more.
Dude.
Yeah, it was pretty great. But I didn't have enough.
That scene could have gone on for a couple more minutes, and I would have been okay with it. And he could have done a little more. I agree with you there. Although I do think the. You know, it's a bit of a spoiler. He gets killed, guys. I'm sorry. But it doesn't ruin anything, I promise you, because everybody gets killed. But in all seriousness, like, in the scene where he where that happens, it's pretty fantastic how it all goes down.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just, he's a good comedian, not only because he's funny, but he's also a good physical comedian.
Oh, absolutely.
He sells things so well.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to spoil that anymore, so I'll move on. And I'll go to Super Dark Times, and I'll start with Super Dark Times here. So I've been waiting for this movie for a while. I don't know about you, but I heard about it, probably close to a year ago I originally heard about it, and then maybe more like 5-6 months ago, I heard people start talking about it as, like, Donnie Darko meets... meet Stand By Me, but a little darker, and I was like, whoa, okay. And I think that's actually a pretty good description. I actually think it's quite a bit darker in a lot of ways, and when it goes, you said, you know, when it goes dark with Tragedy Girls. Yo, when it goes dark with Dark Times, it goes dark.
Oh, absolutely.
And this movie is not a comedy in any way, shape, or form. It's heavy as hell, in my opinion. Like, it was like a thud to my chest. I'll find it. Here we go. My actual title of my review is Coming of Age Thriller Super Dark Times is an aptly named thud to the chest. And, it is super dark, you know?
Yeah, that sums it up.
Yeah, so tell me, what do you think about the movie?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as much on my radar. I heard a little bit of it out of South by Southwest, but
right.
I just from the screenshots, I knew it was kind of up my alley. Like, I love coming of age kind of movies. I like, just kind of that whole, like, kind of mining our you know, general age nostalgia, you know, which this is a period piece taking place in kind of the early 90s. So, you know, a lot of things you can see, you know, like the stuff, you know, the way they're hanging out, you know, trying to smoke cigarettes and watch scrambled porn, like that kind of thing was really, I knew it was going to appeal to me. And lately, I get a little bummed out during the summer because, not to sound like a douchebag, but I get a little worn out, and I do kind of want to see something that's mature, something that has got something going on besides just action, and something with tone.
And what's the irony of having to watch kids in order to get a mature movie?
I know, absolutely, but that's something that works so well in this movie. I mean, because right. It delivers something that's really,
it's really mature.
It's really smart. It's really mature. I love the way that it sets a tone from the very beginning until the end. I mean, it opens up
right.
with a dead deer that's just accidentally killed itself, and it's just like, that's probably some of the lightest stuff that's in this movie, and it carries on throughout that entire thing without really ever breaking from that, because even when good things are happening, there's just such a dread, and you feel kind of like all the weight that's on these
right.
characters' shoulders. That's really sympathetic, because you it's at least, you know, at our age, you know, being in our mid-30s, looking back on that time, you can only imagine it. It is like emotionally wearing on you to kind of, you know what's happened in the film, and they react like kids, which is great.
They do,
you know, and
very much so. Yep.
So yeah, I mean, for me, this is a movie that will most likely end up somewhere, you know, in my top 10, top 15 of the year. I think it got the timing with me of when I wanted to see something like this, and caught me a little off guard, because it reminded me more than Stand By Me and Donnie Darko. It reminded me a little bit of Scott Shermer's debut, Found, which is
I've never seen that.
Oh, it's amazing, amazing. Low budget feature, and Scott Shermer, you know, he got busted on the scene, and he's been pretty prolific, but it's got this sort of tone and dread that I think are very similar, even though Found
cool.
goes much, much darker, and definitely has a lot more scenes that are a little cringy, but no, I think Super Dark Times is a great film that I'm excited to watch again whenever it drops on home video.
Yeah, yeah, and so I currently have it at about 15 on my top of the year list, but there's ones that I like early that I end up not liking as much late, so we'll see. But it's totally, I think you did a good job talking about it there, because it was really heavy for me. It hit me, the timing was really weird, because we just had literally four kids go missing, like teenagers go missing, teenagers and early 20-year-old type guys go missing in our area, and then they got found. Whole big deal, but the crazy thing is, like, there were some parts about the real-life story that was happening right down the street from my house that kind of went in line with this film, you know, that it was just, like, you know, a weed deal and this and that and these things, and we found out that this kid had, you know, got these four kids to come over to buy weed, but he never actually had weed, and he ended up robbing all their money, and then he decided it'd be fun to kill them and burn their bodies and all this other crazy shit. So that all happened, and then I saw this movie right after, and I was like, oh god, you know, like, it was just like, the timing was crazy. So there's a lot of that was running through my head with this that was like just killing me, and so I think that's partially why it hit me in a certain way, but I think it'll hit me maybe in different ways the next time I watch it, when I'm maybe more of a clear mind with that. But I really liked it as well. So my review about that over on Synapse is actually a little bit about what happened here in Pennsylvania and that. And then and I really like, we have, you know, the review that you wrote over on our site, over on Farsighted, that I think it does a really good job explaining it too. So those are the two that we both got to watch, and probably for me, those two, you know, I really like both. I'm glad that I got to watch those two, and I'm going to be watching Low Life soon. So my guess is that like the top three movies that you liked at the festival are probably going to end up being the top three that I liked as well.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling I'm going to really like Low Life from everything I'm reading on it. Doug over at our website, Doug Tilley, who I mentioned before, he covered like six films, I think, a bunch. He covered Graham Skipper's Sequence Break.
Which I'm really excited to see that.
Final Master. It sounded like he didn't love it as much as he wanted to, but found a lot of really redeeming stuff in it. Like a lot of really good signs for where Graham Skipper can go as a filmmaker. The Final Master was a kung fu movie he didn't love, but again, found some interesting stuff in it. Punk Fu Zombie, which was basically, he said, it's got a very Canadian, specifically a very Quebec sensibility. So, you know, I think that it seems like if you're not part of the joke, you might not quite get it. But if you are, then you might love it. I think he covered a couple others as well. Escaped me. Junkhead. Oh, that was a stop motion one that he covered. That sounded really interesting. That's like a really weird Japanese stop motion film. And then Rachel over at the site covered Fashionista, which is Amanda Fuller, Ethan Embry, and Eric Balfour. And it sounded like her opinion on the film kind of reminds me of my opinion on Neon Demon. It's like a gorgeous film that's missing the right, you know?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I want to see that, though, because there's something about, you know, anything with Ethan Embry I want to see, to be completely fair. I'm a big fan of Ethan Embry's ever since, you know, he was, he was Mark in Empire Records. So, he also covered Most Beautiful Island from Glass Eye, which is Larry Fessenden's production company, and she really loved that one.
Absolutely, and big shout out to Rachel, man. She's one of my favorite writers on the site.
I agree.
Yeah, no, she does a good job of writing short, taut reviews that like let me know if I want to see something or not. So big shout
Agreed,
out to Rachel.
Man. I like fucking her pieces rules a lot too. So yeah, and we'll definitely. She's one of the folks where we were talking about trying to get at least three or four of our writers on. Because we're going to try to do weekly episodes in October, since it's, you know, horror month. And so we'll definitely try to get Rachel on. And any of the writers that want to come on that we don't get on that month, we'll get them on sometime soon. Because we want to bring our whole family here onto the podcast. So, before we wrap, there were a couple Fantasia films I wanted to highlight that weren't available to screen from a distance that I really wanted to see. Specifically, the one that really jumps out for me is Mohawk.
Oh, yes.
I'm dying to see Mohawk.
Yeah.
So,
same guy as We Are Still Here, right?
Exactly, yes. And I always, you know, I talk to him all the time because he's a publicist. The director that is actually known in the world a lot as a publicist more than as a director, Ted Geoghegan? Ted G. So Ted G. Yo, I've never been good with names sometimes, man, but he actually wants to come on the podcast, too, so we're going to get him on sometime soon. Probably, and I keep saying sometime soon, but, man, we have, like, this long list starting, so it'll probably be, like, January. But we will get him on, especially once he gets some full theatrical with Mohawk. I think that's when we're going to try to get him on around then. And Mohawk looks so interesting. It's a period piece about a Native American warrior, the bisexual, oh god, there's so much crazy stuff about it, and the reviews are stellar. Like, I have not read a review from anyone that I trust that wasn't, like, over the top. Like, they were all like, this is great. So that's one, and then the other one that jumps out at me is another Wolf Cop.
I know, I was so bummed out that that wasn't available to watch.
And so my opinion on the first movie is, damn, this is a really great concept that the sequel's going to be so much better. That's what I thought about the first one. Like, I was like, oh man, they just set it up for a perfect sequel, but the movie's still not that great. But the character is awesome. The transformation scenes, or the infamous wolf cock scene, is pretty phenomenal. So I'm excited to see another wolf cock. Those were the two that jumped out at me. Were there any others that didn't get screeners that you remember seeing as like, oh man, I really wish I could have seen that?
Yeah, no, I had a couple that I was really bummed out to not be able to see. The first one being Shinjuku Swan 2, okay. Which is made by my current favorite working director, Sion Sono.
It's a new Sono film. I heard about that too.
Which this year, I mean, he released, you know, already released Tag and you know, put out one of my favorite movies.
Oh, Tag's on Netflix.
I checked it out not too long ago. It's good. It's smart and weird, you know, but I mean,
and weird is what Sono is.
Exactly. So when I saw that on there, I didn't give a shit that it was a sequel to a movie that I'll probably never get a chance to see. I just see his name and I know that I got to see it. So I really want to see that. The other one was a Ugandan film, Bad Black, which is a kind of a shot on video action film out of Uganda that looks so fucking rad. Like, I don't know. I have no idea what this movie is actually about. It just looks like a really fun homemade action movie, coming out of, you know.
Here are the reviews, ready? That were listed on the Fantasia page. Bizarre, laugh out loud, funny, and utterly unique. This one says, it's impossible not to love this movie.
This one says,
an awesome, delightful blast of action. So I have no idea what it's about either, but that sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
and the main character's name is Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, which is so cool. And I mean, and the stuff coming out of Wakaliwood is pretty is all really interesting. I love what African countries are turning out these days, with just really having this great grassroots homemade filmmaking kind of revolution right now. So yeah, those are the two that I really want to see. You know, you already mentioned another Wolf Cop, which Wolf Cop is a very, very flawed movie that kills one of the greatest characters ever in a comedy. But I was hoping with another Wolf Cop, they could have gone through there, kind of put together a script that was going to be fun and bring back some people that they really shouldn't have gotten rid of in the first film. So, but overall, I mean, I can't complain. I was happy with the movies that we got a chance to see. Definitely a lot of things, you know, if I keep going through that list, I can name stuff all the way through.
Oh, definitely, definitely, yeah.
And also glad to see that 68 Kill played again, did great, and, you know, I think we've probably brought up that film every single episode, but...
I feel like it, but it deserves it, man. That's going to be a top tenner for me this year without a doubt.
Yeah,
it's
going to take a lot to knock that off of my list.
And it is definitely the type of film that we need to tout on this on this podcast. It is sleazy, it is great, it is fantastic, and you should all go see it. So, wrapping up, I don't think we're going to make any specific recommendations other than go to the Fantasia Festival website and check out all the cool shit they played this year, and look at maybe finding some of the ones that are going to be coming out, you know, in theaters or some of them direct to, you know, streaming, and go check them out. Some of the ones we talked about, maybe there's some ones on there you didn't hear us talk about, but they jump out at you. Just go check them out, because it's a great festival, and if you're ever, you know, able to make it up to Canada, you know, it's a great place to spend some time this summer. It's a little cooler up there, you know, and they serve milk in a bag, you know, I mean, it's cool.
Oh, yeah, man, and donuts. Why the fuck not?
Oh, dude, Tim Hortons, man, that place is the shit.
Oh, man, I'm super jealous.
We're too fat to talk about donuts and not go eat one. I really want to go eat one. But, all right, so guys, we'll be coming back at you in the next couple weeks with an episode with Stephen Biro, where we're going to be covering some real classics. I'm not even going to hit them up, because you've definitely seen them, so just tune in and you'll be ready. You'll be ready to hear about it. And then the other episode that we're going to cover is going to be some... Romero movies that are maybe not his biggest hits, but some of the ones we really wanted to revisit. Or in my case, one of them I'm going to visit for the first time. So probably we're looking at Martin and Land of the Dead for that one. So those, if you want to prep to listen, feel free to check those ones out. And we'll be coming back with those. And at the end of the month, we'll be here with Ryan Prowse. So it's going to be a big month for us.
Oh, absolutely. And also, here over the next week, if you guys cannot get enough of me and my dulcet tones, I'm going to be having a new podcast as well that's going to be a spinoff with my ex-wife's new husband, Chris Sargent.
Which is so weird, dude.
Yeah, which you know, I mean, we're going to be doing a show. It's, we're going to be covering more more mainstream films, you know, more classic films, and also having the fun of exploring also our relationship of, you know, raising kids and everything in a very 21st century modern family kind of thing. So
yeah,
it's gonna be called Misspent Matinee, and that should be dropping right here on the Farsighted Network, where everything's fucking rad and everything's a fucking party. So make sure Woo-hoo! That you download that too.
Yeah, no doubt. And so thanks a lot, guys, and I can't let us leave without the official Blaine sign off.
Everybody, we'll see you next time. Peace.
Peace.
Explain.